Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. If you're ever in the mood for chalupas, I'm the one to show you how. Please forgive me if I have done that particular intro before. I know that there are a couple of fake Sean songs that I've done more than once on the show, and it mortified me when I first heard that. Well, I don't want to say mortified. It disappointed me when I first heard that, because I was like, oh, shoot. And it made me paranoid that I might do that again in the future, and so I think there are a couple of fake Sean songs that just still sit. I'm not sure if I used them or not, and so I'm playing it safe, and they haven't been used at all. I don't know, I haven't done a fake Sean song in a while. I'm recording this mid-2018, and Bosk only knows when it's coming out. Boy, this wind is really blowing. It makes me think the sound will be completely unusable, which is not good. Saturday night. SATURDAY. Night. God, that wind. It tells me it's going to be dark soon, too. So I can't very well just walk and wait for the wind to go away. If I get down there out of the wind, I might be able to have good sound. Saturday night. And as far as I can think, I've only done one fake Sean song this whole year. There was a song I heard on the radio. No, it wasn't a radio. Somebody was karaokeing it the other day. And I thought, that's a good fake Sean song. Because initially my idea was something that's not at all manly. That's sung by a woman, or that's not dignified. Those are the songs that I should do for fake Sean, and I should make it sound like he's reluctant or under duress to do these songs. But I don't know. Maybe it's that I've started to tire of them, or they're just so much work that I just sort of leave them for special occasions now. Anyhow, welcome to the Rish Outcast. My name is Rish Outfield, and this is the first episode I am recording at the lake where the family cabin is located. Now, we have a cabin in the woods, my family does, and my family uses it, and my uncle's family uses it. He helped build it, so it was always open for him. And recently, my brother-in-law's family has started using it. And now you're using it. No. Well, you're welcome to. Just make sure it's sometime when there's not already people planning on doing that. This is the very first time I've come to the lake to podcast. And right now, I'm just right here by the water. Here, let me... Ooh, mud. That was the sound of my foot in mud. This is the sound of me touching the water with my foot. So I'm right here at the water's edge. How'd that song go? Don't go down to the water's edge. I heard her say, I didn't do it. I saw who did. Maybe I'm making up that song. I just thought it would be neat to start at one end of the lake and walk completely around the lake podcasting, just to see how long that would take. When we first moved here, when I first came to the cabin, I took my niece to the lake and we tried to walk all the way around. I think she was 5 at the time, and we didn't quite make it. we walked and we walked, and she said, it's been a really long time. I'm tired. And I was like, oh, what do you want to do? What, you want me to carry you? And she's like, yeah. And so instead of going all the way around, I just ended up having her on my back and coming back the way we had come. And so it wasn't for years that I actually walked all the way around the lake to find out how big it was. And how big it is depends on the time of year. The lake really, really fills up after winter from melted snow. And it can be very large. But as the summer goes on, all the water in this lake starts to get used to water people's crops down in the valley. And then, of course, it dries up. And the end of the season, which is September, I think we've come up in October a couple of times. It's not a lake anymore, a little pond. Anyhow, I just thought it would be fun to podcast while I'm here. Right now I've come to a sort of a calm little place where the water is clear. It's bubbling up from underground, which means this is probably the cleanest the water gets. You can kind of hear it trickling. There's many hoof prints of the animals that come here to drink. I expected to see some kind of amphibian here, whether it was frogs or salamanders or tadpoles, but this is where it first comes out, so it's super cold, and they tend to hang out where the water is still and warm. I've gone on long enough that now I'm starting to not regret my ever coming out here. We're getting close to that. But I'm starting to wonder if this should just be a conversation episode or if I should go for it and present to you the story I was going to present to you. Usually, when I do a story on this show, it's something that has been around a while. You know, a story that I have published that's out there that people can buy. Or it's a story that I wrote for a contest, and that contest is long since ended, and I lost. But this is one that I wrote just this month, and I thought that I would present it to you because, oh geez, I will sometimes have bursts of ambition. And in those short bursts, I will have a bunch of ideas of things that I ought to do, things that I should do, things that I will do. And then I don't. Then I have a refractory period wherein I have no ambition for a good long time. And it is not a character trait I am thrilled with. I'm trying to figure out what that dead animal is there. I think it's a duck. What also floats on water? Oh my gosh, it's a ton of baby ducks and their mother seems to be dead. Well, don't swim away. Let me take a picture. Please don't. Ah, she wasn't dead. I was gonna throw a rock to see why that duck was so weirdly shaped. And the thing was, it was a mother duck with, I don't know, 5-6 newborns around her, but her head was in the mud. And I've no idea why. Maybe that's just how they sleep. And all the baby ones were sleeping too? It's so strange that I wouldn't have realized they were alive. Christ, there's a second outtake. Look, guys, maybe this will be split in two. It's not a long story, but yeah, I think I'll split this into two episodes. And this first episode can have all of this bullcrap about me coming to the lake. I'm about halfway around right now. I see a bunch of water birds and then something that's not a water bird, but it is big. Oh, it's flying right toward me. It is beautiful. I don't know what it is. It was black. Completely black. Maybe it was a raven. Do they have ravens up here where it gets super cold? I think ravens would be smarter than that. It could have been a crow, which everybody has. Okay, so let me keep talking, and I apologize for the lengthy, sprawling rambling introduction, but it ain't the first time, is it? Don't think I'm going to be able to use that picture I took of the ducks, because by the time I got my camera out, they were already very far away. She had just awakened rudely. The little ducks had already started swimming away. And that's the thing, is I thought, oh, the mother has died and all these little ducks are left alone. Oh gosh. Anyhow, back to the story. I wrote this story this month, and the reason that I wrote this story in the first place is now no longer qualifies. It's now been made redundant. That sucks. Well, what can you do? This story is called Todd, Jenny, and the Ugly Doll. But that may not be the best title for it. Well, that's certainly not the best title. Listen. If I go with a different title, I'm going to insert it absolutely flawlessly right here.
That Creepy Doll.
Okay. So that's the title. It is a new story. And I'll go ahead and talk to you about it on the other side.
Todd, Jenny, and the Ugly Doll. Written and narrated by Rish Outfield. As the plane touched down, Todd Lorenzo felt one more pang of nervousness. Not due to the flight, which had been pretty turbulence-free, but due to his big date down below. Big date. Blind date was more like it. After semi-intense, semi-romantic interactions online with Jenny Dale Arden 81 Mickelson for several weeks now, they were finally going to meet in real life. Todd had been divorced for 2 years, though closer to three if he were to check a calendar. And while he had gone on a handful of dates, quite probably the bare minimum allowed by law, Jenny was the first woman that made him feel something since his wife, who, in the end, made him feel a lot of things, none of them pleasant. And he had never actually met Jenny. Oh, he knew what she looked like. They had talked on Skype a number of times, and he liked the way she looked, although he had to admit that she had surprised him with her too youthful appearance the first time. She was short and could probably pass for a kid if you looked at just the right angle. He liked her voice, her sense of humor, her geekiness. His own username had been Denim Symbiote. Still was, though he didn't frequent message boards quite as much as he had when he'd had the IT job. And the way she had smiled when he logged on, 3 weeks ago, had been the clincher. He loved that smile. He had been the one to suggest they meet IRL, maybe at some neutral place like Vegas or Knott's Berry Farm or the Winchester House in San Jose. But Jenny lived in Colorado and suggested he fly out to Denver, she'd pick him up, and they'd take it from there. And where that would be, exactly, he wasn't sure. What if it didn't work in person? What if they just weren't attracted to each other? Worse yet, what if he was attracted to her, and he certainly had been so far, but she didn't feel the same? Honestly, if he had these doubts, Jenny's had to be just as bad, or worse. It was pretty brave, actually, that she was willing to drive up here and meet him, not knowing if he was a douchey prick or some kind of serial murderer. Maybe she wouldn't show, and he'd know exactly how brave she'd turned out to be. But he found a distraction for his worries a couple of minutes later. They were all deplaning, waiting for the first-class passengers to leave, when he realized he'd left his book on the empty seat next to his. He had to swim upstream to get back to his spot and scooped the paper back up from where he'd set it. It was a murder mystery set in an alternate 1949 where Germany had won World War II. Then he decided to just wait for the people to get past him before he'd try shuffling out again. A flight attendant called across from the front, asking if everything was all right, and he waved at her. All but two or three passengers had left, among them a little girl in blue who was looking at a phone or something, her head down as she walked. He rose and, making sure he had both his carry-on and his book, made his way out of the plane. Several rows away, he saw the doll. It was sitting at the window seat, one of those human-sized dolls they used to sell for a fortune in Toys R Us stores. It wore a veil, like a Middle Eastern princess or a funeral attendee. The doll had been left there, just as he'd left his book. He turned to alert the stewardess, but she was no longer at her post by the curtains. He made a decision. A stupid one, it turned out. He hurried over to the seat, scooped up the doll, and stuffed it under his arm. He then hurried out of the coach section, hoping to catch up to the little girl, though he had no way of knowing whether she was the one who'd lost it or not. Only one passenger was left in first class, where the captain and two flight attendants were waiting. "Did a little girl go through here?" he asked, pointlessly, since where else would she have gone?
"Several," said the captain.
"Is there a problem?"
asked the younger stewardess.
"No, he said, craning to see if the little girl was at the thing, the tunnel between plane and airport. He spied her there just as she stepped out of sight, her backpack worn high up on her shoulders, and said,
"Nothing, thanks."
Todd Lorenzo emerged into the Denver airport, popping his ears for a moment, then looking around. There were a lot of travelers, both arriving and departing, but he didn't see that hunched-over girl with the backpack anywhere. He held up the doll, just in case someone was looking for it, but no one approached him, and he had to get out of the way of the other passengers trying to move past him. He would think a kid would realize they left their doll and be wanting to go back in, or have a grown-up go back aboard and retrieve it. But no one was standing around, except a flight attendant, finishing up something on a computer. He advanced just as she was stepping away.
"Hey there, stewardess,"
he began,
and then remembered he had heard they hated being called that. Where had he heard that? And why was it they had a problem with it?
The woman, who was hard-faced with very painstaking, elaborate makeup on, turned and pasted a neutral expression on her face before she met his gaze.
"Uh-huh.
I'm sorry," he said, feeling embarrassed now about the archaic name and the silly question. "Did you see a little girl get off the plane just now? She was..." He tried to remember what she was wearing, what color her hair was. "I think she had overalls on."
"Sorry, sir," the woman said.
She was obviously needed someplace else, or maybe just wanted to be.
"Is there anyone else left on the pl-"
he started to say, but this woman had gotten off before he did, or might not even have been aboard it.
"Never mind," he said,
then added,
"Thanks."
He thought he'd just hand the woman the doll, but then his phone began to ring. It was the old Queen theme to the Flash Gordon movie, which meant it was Jenny.
"Hey there," he said.
"Hey there,"
she said back.
"Are you here?"
he asked, then, in case she didn't know what he meant.
"At the airport, I mean?"
"I am. Why? Does that surprise you?"
"No, not at all. I needed to take care of something just now."
Jenny paused before responding, perhaps a little too long. Todd added,
"Somebody left something on the plane, and I'm trying to get it back to her."
"Oh,"
Jenny said.
"And what was it she left?"
He realized she may not understand he was talking about a child, and he did want to make a decent first impression, if that was even possible.
It was a doll, a little girl's doll.
"Okay. And?"
"And I don't see her anywhere. I figured..."
"Why don't you try baggage claim?"
Jenny asked.
"Is that where you are?"
"No, but I could be." Want me to meet you there?
Sure. We could look for her together.
An adventure,
Jenny said with a smile in her voice.
Was it Southwest 116?
Sky Blue 116, he said, distracted, trying to find signs for the baggage claim.
Jet Blue,
you mean, she said through the phone. Right, right. He saw the sign and headed there, since he had to go there anyway for his suitcase. Baggage claim was no help to him, in finding the owner of the doll, anyway. He didn't see the little girl among all the people gathered there. He did, however, see Jenny Mickelson. She usually wore Disney or movie-themed T-shirts when he Skyped with her, but today she wore a navy blue blouse and tan slacks, and had done her hair and makeup a little nicer than he was used to. A good sign, he thought, unconsciously patting the unruly part of his hair that constantly threatened to puff out like Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future. She walked over to him. Denim, she said. Dale, he said back. She hesitated when he did. Should they hug? Shake hands? Kiss? Or whatever? They compromised with the quickest of hugs. The embrace was brief, but it was nice, and he made note of it. Again, he was taken aback by her shortness. He was only average height, really, so it wasn't a problem, but when she hugged him, he did wonder what they'd look like if he were 6'2". She took a step back.
You've got better eyes than I thought you would, she said.
Better eyes?
You know what I mean, she said with a smile.
But he didn't. Her gaze shifted, and a little divot appeared between her brows.
Oh, is that for me?
What?
I know I look young, but...
He realized she was looking at the veiled doll, and he blinked.
No, sorry, I told you, a little girl left... I'm joking. Why is it wearing a veil?
Jenny asked, seeming amused. I don't know. He did see a couple of children nearby, but the only girl was about 14. Also looking at her phone, though.
Oh, right, this is the limited edition grieving widow Barbie,
Jenny joked. Todd chuckled perfunctorily and gave the young woman his complete attention. Was it a long drive?
Not really. No traffic.
Oh, that's good. He looked at her face, closer than he ever had before. She had kind of a long... What was that called? The divot between nose and upper lip. Peritoneum? But it worked for her face. Her mouth seemed to turn up on the corners, as though remembering something funny. That worked, too. He wondered what she was thinking, how she thought he looked. He had been getting a little flabby around the waist, but he'd also been working on it, going to the gym 3 or 4 times... Okay, usually more like once a week, but he'd intended to go all the time.
What did the girl look like? Jenny asked.
I didn't see her face, he admitted, but craned his head around the room again. Somehow, in the 15 minutes since landing, he decided that the girl he'd seen only the back of getting off the plane was definitely the doll's owner, rather than simply possibly the owner.
Well, what now?
Jenny asked.
Do you have any baggage?
What do you mean? Todd didn't understand the question. Jenny squinted at him, perhaps having her doubts about this guy.
Didn't you bring any luggage?
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant...
Yeah, I have a suitcase.
They joined the group by the carousel, waiting for the bags to start arriving. Jenny pointed out a family that had 2 girls of doll-carrying age, and Todd sidled up to them. They were not receptive.
No, thank you, said their father, in the way that a stuffy English noble from a century ago might on Downton Abbey, except without the accent or the good manners.
Jenny stepped closer to Todd and muttered,
I think he thought you were trying to sell him the doll.
Todd blinked, repeating what he had said in his mind.
Maybe you should do the next one, he said finally.
She nodded and approached a family that turned out to speak Japanese and not English, and also turned out not to be missing a doll. You know, I only sort of glimpsed her earlier, Todd offered, still studying the ex-passengers around them. Had a hoodie on, kind of hunched over with a backpack, but I don't see her now. The luggage began to appear through the little rubber curtain in the wall. She got an idea.
Hey, do you know what seat it was left on? Maybe the airline can contact the people who are sitting there.
I don't. Sorry. Jenny looked down at the doll.
Why are you so much trouble, kiddo?
She lifted the veil for a look in its face.
Do you have any...
Todd glanced over when his friend stopped talking. She had an expression that could only be identified as revulsion. What? There was something wrong with the doll's head. It was human in shape, but the face... It wasn't put together right. The eyes weren't on the same plane, and the nose was... It was a diseased-looking pit in the middle of the face. There were two mouths where dimples would be, and a hole not unlike a navel where the chin should be. Yikes, Todd said.
Yeah,
breathed Jenny. She replaced the veil and tried to hand the doll back to Todd.
You can hold on to it,
he said, forcing a chuckle. If you like.
I don't want it.
He couldn't blame her.
Why do you suppose it would have a face like that?
He asked.
Can you just sculpt a doll yourself, like a Build-A-Bear workshop? I don't think a child would keep this doll. It must be a twisted adult.
Jenny turned to him, testing his reaction.
You into that sort of thing, Denim?
No, he said, a bit too vehemently. I'm a chicken about that stuff. I wouldn't even watch those old Chucky movies. Her icy stare melted a little bit.
Oh, come on, those were fun. But this is not.
Right. Todd looked around one last time, hoping maybe the little girl would finally make her appearance. Perhaps it was a blind child, somebody not picky about factory rejects or... Nope. Even blindness wouldn't explain this plastic and felt monstrosity. There was a desk in between the conveyor belts, with an employee standing there, also looking at her phone. Somebody to talk to if your luggage doesn't show up, or your bag arrives turned inside out or something. That reminded Todd about his own suitcase. Sure enough, it was sitting there, moving slowly in a circle, the only green piece of luggage still unclaimed. It was small enough it could have fit in the overhead compartment, so he should have just used it as a carry-on. He grabbed it with his non-doll hand and considered putting the doll in the suitcase, but not knowing what kind of weekend this would turn out to be, he had brought way too many clothing options, including shoes, and that left pitifully little space for hideous dolls.
"Anything else?"
Jenny asked, checking on the baggage carousel. He took one more look around him, but the hunched girl from before was not there anymore, if she had ever been. Maybe she had just carried on her baggage, like he should have done.
Guess not. So, what's the plan?
She asked. He cocked his head to indicate the airport worker. Jenny didn't catch his drift.
What? You know that lady?
No.
So what about her?
Hey, he said, if you don't mind, I'll just leave the doll with her, and then we can be on our way.
Sure. No problem.
From the expression on her face, it didn't seem to be. He stepped up to the desk, and Jenny followed him, standing behind him like police backup. The woman, who seemed awfully young, but still at adult height, no offense, Dale Arden, 81, had not looked up from her phone.
Excuse me.
She nodded, acknowledging his presence, then typed something on her iPhone and looked over.
Can I help you, sir?
I think so. I found this doll, and I wonder if you could take it, but you'll hold on to it. The set of her jaw changed. Once again, he seemed to have used the wrong words.
Oh, we can't accept that, sir.
You can't? Why not? The attendant tried to smile, but it only registered as a grimace.
Because you know why not.
He grimaced right back. Because it's ugly? Look, I didn't make the doll.
I didn't say you made it.
The attendant swallowed. But
did you?
He squinted, trying to see the joke. What do you mean? Jenny suddenly squeezed his arm. It wasn't an intimate gesture, but it did draw his attention. She said,
They can't accept it because they think it might be a, you know, rhymes with Tom.
Tom? What rhymes with Tom? And then he realized what she was getting at, what the airline employee was probably getting at, too. He shook his head, looking the attendant straight on. Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything like that. I wouldn't even consider... Jenny then put her hand right over his mouth, a decidedly intimate gesture.
He didn't say the word, she told the employee. We didn't say the word.
The attendant was not amused. Had perhaps never been. Not even during stand-up comedy specials or Looney Tunes.
Where can we leave this, then? Todd asked the woman. I'd suggest you dispose of it somewhere else, not at an airport. It'll be all right,
Todd heard Jenny say. He felt angry all of a sudden. He had done absolutely nothing wrong, and was pretty sure he hadn't broken any rules. Todd wanted to argue, but Jenny grabbed the doll and walked away, leaving him no choice but to follow. He gave the attendant an apologetic smile. She did not smile back. Todd nearly tripped over his suitcase, but scooped it up and walked off. He saw where Jenny was heading. There was a child, a heavy-set one in purple and pink, standing by the bank of payphones, which was amazing to find in this day and age. But not a heavy-set child, of course, but payphones. Jenny gestured to her and, not waiting for Todd's reply, stepped right up to her.
Hey there, is this your doll? It's pretty great that...
The little girl began to shriek. To call it an overreaction to a stranger addressing her was one hell of an understatement. Todd speedwalked to Jenny's side and took her arm, a rather intimate gesture when he did it, then walked her away. He was sure that airport security was going to be on them now.
Wow, Jenny exhaled. Stranger danger.
Yeah, imagine if I had been the one who talked to her. She snorted.
You? You'd already be in a room somewhere, being interrogated, like that scene in Argo.
He had to agree. Did you like that movie? He asked. He didn't know why.
I don't like Ben Affleck.
But it won the Oscar, he said. Still not sure why.
Okay,
she conceded.
I guess I don't like him as an actor, but as a director, sure.
He nodded. Some common ground, then.
Anyway,
he took the doll out of Jenny's little hand. He was distracted and eager to be rid of the thing.
Do I just toss it, then? Better not, she said. I'll bet they're watching you now.
Of course they were. He sighed. Well, I guess a doll would be a great place to hide an explosive device. Nobody's going to suspect a doll, even one as ugly as this.
I was joking, Jenny stage whispered. Now you've got me worried.
Todd stopped in his tracks, all too aware of the first impression he was making.
I'm sorry, Jenny. You now have my complete attention.
She only half nodded.
That would be more reassuring if you hadn't glanced at the doll when you said that.
He tried to laugh, to shrug this whole thing off. But it was hard. Jenny had admitted to being nervous about their meetup, and sure, that was understandable. Expected, even. But men could be nervous, too. And he had flown out here, given up his weekend, aware of the chance that it would not work out and would all be for nothing. That was something. Look, he said softly, deliberately not breaking eye contact this time. I'm going to go to the restroom there. When I come out, I'm not going to have this with me, and we can start again. She smiled, and it was a warm one, though not quite the one she'd given him when they'd first met up.
I appreciate the intention, but I was a little girl once with a favorite doll, a petal princess. Remember those?
He didn't. She took the veiled doll back.
Anyway, it's better not to just throw it in the trash or leave it in a toilet stall. Besides, what if they are watching you?
It was a disquieting thought. But she was right. It was better to just take it, go somewhere less paranoid, and then get rid of it. They could laugh about it afterward.
Shall we go?
Jenny asked, and he liked the old-fashioned way she said it.
Okay, that is where we are going to stop at this point. Sorry. Let's talk about three things. Let's talk about the title of the story, the reason I wrote the story, and the tone of the story, okay? But before that, let's talk about the reason that I didn't know if this is going to be one episode or two, and that is that just yesterday, I got it all typed up and formatted to where I could publish it if I wanted to. And it's really rare that I get a story written, typed up, and published in that short of a time. In fact, I think some writers would probably tell you don't do that. What you need to do is put the story down, come back to it in a number of weeks or months or years in my case, and then you will see the story with fresh eyes and know what needs to be changed, what doesn't work, what feels wrong. It's really good advice. But, as I said, I had some ambition recently, and I sat down and I got my microphone all set up, my, dare I say it, professional microphone all set up. I was doing a story for Starship Sofa. Then after that, I was going to start on an audiobook of a novella. And then I thought, well, I probably wouldn't finish a novella tonight, but I probably have time for a short story. I'm going to do the Creepy Doll story because I have it right here in front of me, all formatted. I hadn't closed the document. Why not? The novella in question is A Mark on the Sky. It would be great if A Mark on the Sky was out there and available for purchase before this episode comes out. But to be honest, the amount of work that it's going to take to edit and publish A Mark on the Sky is considerably more than just the Ugly Doll story, plus this episode that goes with it. So, most likely, Mark on the Sky is forthcoming. It's too bad. I was talking to my mom about like all the, you know, the ambition that I had, and she was saying, well, you need to set aside an hour each day to publishing your stuff and just do it every single day instead of some of the other things that you do to waste your time. And she's right. Right now I'm pretty busy, but I'm not that busy. And I always have some free time, and I've been using a lot of it to write, which is great, but it's not great for my pocketbook. It's not great for my fledgling career. But if I took my mom's advice and set aside a year, I've come to a little part where there's a lot of rocks, and that's going to make the recording super loud. And part of me just wants to sit down on these rocks and record here. No, that's not smart, is it? Thing is, I started out so late that in about a half hour, it's going to be dark. We've almost got to the point where my sunglasses have to come off. Oop, I just took them off, and it's better. If I followed my mom's advice, I would have a mark on the sky out there, and I would have 10,000 coffins out there, and I would have the ugly doll out there, and I would have the calling too out there, instead of none of those. Well, kids, we are definitely splitting this into two episodes now. I was at the end, and I got out the recorder to see how long it had been, to determine whether it would be one episode or two episodes. And I had somehow turned off the recorder 20 minutes ago or longer. So, yeah, decision's been made for me. I'm going to tell this story again. Great. If I followed my mom's advice, I would have more stuff out there. Along those lines, in a previous period, a burst of ambition, I had this idea of putting out collections of my audio fiction. And Gino Moretto, who created the logo for the episode you're listening to now, for the Rish Outcast, he created the logo for the podcast that dares not speak its name. He sometimes does cover art for me, and every once in a while, when he finds ambition, I think, he will send me an email and he'll be like, Rish, mate, you have anything you need cover art for? Now, I don't know that that's really what Gino sounds like. Rish, mate, do you have any... No, nobody sounds like that. All right, so I had gotten him to do the covers for the first two audio collections that I put out. The first, he did a gargoyle, and the second, he did a spooky tree. But unbidden, Gino sent me an email that had a scary doll on it. And next to the doll, it said, Creepy doll and other stories. The audio fiction of Rish Outfield, Volume 3. See, that's exactly what Gino sounds like there. And he sent that to me, and I was really impressed. I thought it looked good. But I sent him an email. I said, oh, dude, I appreciate this, but I don't have a story called Creepy Doll. And he's like, well, I know, mate. It was a placeholder. It was... Okay, I'm sorry. I can't do Gino's voice. I apologize. It's an insult to him, and it's more of an insult to me that I am trying. But he said it was a placeholder, that he'll swap out the actual title with something else. But I liked the way that it looked. And so I said, gosh, if I had just a little more time and energy, I think I'd write a story called Creepy Doll. You know, maybe one where there's a guy and a girl and they go on a first date and they find a doll. Like they go to a diner and somebody has left a doll behind, and they have a scare. Well, or maybe it's an airport. They're meeting at an airport for, you know, maybe it's a first date, blind date kind of thing, and they encounter this creepy doll instead, in lieu of a first date. And I sent that to him, and he's like, oh, hey, that sounds all right. But, you know, I knew I was never going to write it. And if, let's say that for every 10 ideas that I have, 3 of those I will sit down and write my idea down. You know, it's like, oh, hey, I had an idea about some kids that run afoul of the boogeyman. And of those, I'd say half of those just remain paragraphs or remain, you know, notes. And the other half, I start writing. And I'd say about half of those I actually finish. And it used to be a lot worse than that. But it's still pretty dang terrible, wouldn't you say? I'm no math whiz, but that's just sad that I am that non-productive. Is that a word, non-productive? If it isn't, I'm coining the phrase, and there'll be a picture of me next to it under the definition of non-productive. But my family went on this vacation this month, and we got to the airport, and we were alerted, we were told that the plane was coming from California, and one of the crew persons, got sick. And They were trying to find a replacement there in California, but the flight had been delayed 3 or 4 hours while they found somebody. And so, you know, my nephews started playing video games. My mom started to read. She's an avid reader, more so than anyone I know. She's the only person I know who reads more than one book a week. My buddy Jeff tends to average about a book a week. But my mom, there are some weeks when it's like 3 books, 4 books. I'm sure she burned through 5 or 6 on that trip. She just buys them, fills up bags at the used bookstore, and reads them all, and then brings the full bag back, turns it in for credit, and buys a new bag full. It's something that I admire about her and could never, ever do myself. So, me, I could have played video games, and, well, I don't have anything to play video games on, or I could have read, but instead I chose to write. And I sat down and I started to write that story about the creepy doll. And to the airline's credit, they managed to get the plane there in less than 4 hours. They said it would be 3 or 4, and I think it ended up being just under 3 that we were delayed. They said, you know, the plane is on its way, and it will take a few minutes for us to clean the plane so that people can board it, but they must have really scrambled so that we could get on it like 15 or 20 minutes after it arrived. It was JetBlue, and I was impressed with them, and so I put a reference to JetBlue in this story. Then we flew to California, and during the vacation, every night but one, I sat down and I made myself write. I finished this story, and I started on a new Ben Parks story, which I have since stopped. Who knows if I will pick it up again? I sure hope I do. But anyhow, I recently went to the library, and I brought my notebook, and I sat down and I typed up what I had written. It actually took me 2 trips to the library. Things sometimes take longer. I take that back. Everything takes longer than you think that it will, or than it should. So here we are. I think I'm going to stop now, because the first time I went through this, I was on the precipice of, do I split it in two or not? I said, okay, well, if I've split this in two, then this is the end of the first part. Let me see how long it is. I got my recorder out and it had stopped recording. In fact, I'm paranoid now. I'm going to get the recorder out and look. No, it's still recording. Let me just say this. We will come back soon and we'll do the second half of the episode, and I will talk more to you about the points that I was going to make before. But ambition. I did an episode about ambition the last time I went to San Diego Comic-Con. I haven't been back since. It's a shame. Once you miss a time, you are no longer on their list of... They have a bunch of tickets that are allotted for previous attendees that get released on a certain day, and they're gone fast. But after that, there is a big batch of tickets that is released to the general public. And it's more tickets, but they go faster. And unfortunately, in 2016, I did not manage to get the tickets in the easy drawing, the early drawing. And so this year and last year, I've had to contend in the big competition with everybody. How did I get into that? Sorry. See, this is why it's 2 episodes, because I can't stop going off topic. I put out an episode about ambition. It's one of my bugaboos. It's one of the things that's just a stumbling block in my life. I don't think I'm ever going to overcome it, guys. If you do not have that problem and you have ambition, I'm going to put out an invitation here that you could help me with a Rish Outcast story if you would like. So I'm going to just put this out here. If you would like to narrate a story for the Rish Outcast, it would be a story by me. Let me know. And I'm trying to decide whether I would need you to edit it or not. Because the thing is, the editing is the hardest part. It's the most arduous. It's the least fun. It's the thing that takes the most time in a world where everything takes more time than it should. I'd like you to edit it, but if you can't, then yeah, I guess I can do that. Just let me know. You know, I have a couple of stories that are female-centric. The main character is female. Kind of like I did with the Burger King story where I got Tina to narrate it. And those are always weird. I see them and I decide not to narrate them because it's just, if the main character is female or if the multiple main characters are female, wouldn't it be better if the narrator were female? And the answer is yes. Even if you think that I'm a great narrator, and I appreciate it if you do, there are certain stories where I'm not the best choice for the narrator. But I think between me and Renee Chambliss, we probably cover 80%, maybe more, of the stuff out there. There may be something where you need a background in a certain language or you need an ethnicity. Anyhow, I got a couple of stories that they're just never going to come out unless we get a female narrator. But aside from that, there are plenty of stories, and I'll try and have something shorter than this one that I'll just set aside, let me know, and that can be a future Rish Outcast where somebody else talks for once. So I will be back very soon with the rest of this. There's already one part that I recorded the first time that I didn't record this time, just in an effort to get this dang thing over with. Thank you for listening. Feel free to support me on Patreon. I put something up on Patreon just yesterday. It was last night, in fact. I had to be up at 7-something today to help my brother, and then it was time to go to the cabin when we were finished working. And before I went to sleep, I put something up for Patreon, and it's only for them. So if you'd like to support me, even, you know, for a dollar, please do. I appreciate the crap out of it. Well, that sounds kind of vulgar, doesn't it? I appreciate the Care Bear hugs out of it. Even if you don't have the means to support me, a kind word is supportive, and a volunteer to jump on the grenade of "I will narrate a story for you, Rish," is also useful. So thank you. Have a safe flight.
Now listen up, you, because I shan't be saying this again. Like it or not, the Rish Outcast is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. While it hurts to say, that means you can't alter, sell, or claim ownership of the file. But you can download it, share it, and grind it to bits under your heavy boots free of charge.
The music in the show was by Kevin MacLeod over at incompetech.com.
There's also a Patreon fund attached to it if you've lost hold of your senses and want to encourage more of the show. In return, he presents exclusive content as well as early access to the episodes. You're still here? Well, get out there and get on with your day. You think the bad guys are going to stop themselves? Thus endeth the lesson.
I'll go ahead and talk to you about it on the other side. Oh, shoot. I was going to split this into two, huh? Dang it. Okay. We'll do this shit again. If there is only one episode it's worth, then I will omit all the stuff about doing two episodes. But if there are two episodes, then I will come back with, okay, that is where we are going to stop, or, okay, that was my story. Sorry? Seem to have reached a place where I cannot walk without getting muddy. And yeah, I don't want to bury the lead. The mud here can be treacherous. Heck, this will be an outtake, because I don't want this so early in the story, in the episode, but I came out here to do this very thing one time by myself. And there was some mud. I'm not going to go as far as to say that it was quicksand, but it had quicksand-like properties. And I stepped in it and started to sink. And I was like, oh, whoa, that's scary. And I pulled to get my leg out, and it just went down deeper. And then my other leg went into the mud. And basically it was a foot of mud, but under the mud was like water or watery, muddy substance. And I just couldn't get myself out. Now, it wasn't that I was sinking in it, although I got down past my knees, probably up to my upper thighs, and I couldn't get out. I was stuck. So yeah, it wasn't quicksand pulling me under so much as quicksand holding me fast. And at first it was funny because it was like, oh gosh, look, what have I gotten myself into? But seconds became minutes. And, I started trying to pull myself out one leg at a time, and I could feel my shoes starting to come off down there in the mud. I was like, oh no, I'm either going to lose my shoes or I'm going to stay in this mud. And finally, I had been in that situation, in that predicament for 2 or 3 minutes. And I wasn't panicking, but I started to think about it. It's like, nobody knows I'm out here. How long would it take them to come looking for me? And the thing is, I think I could shout for help and someone would come if someone were out fishing or hiking or, you know, someone had a cabin on the right side of the pond. But it didn't come to that. What I ended up doing was I slipped off my shoe under the water. It just came right off. And once my shoe was off, I was able to move a little better. The suction wasn't quite so bad. And so I was able to reach down into the mud, getting my chest and my arm completely covered in mud to grab my shoe. And then, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I crawled through the mud on my stomach to get out, because walking just made me sink, but what's the word? Floating was the way to go. Maybe not the best story, I'm sorry. I pride myself on being a storyteller, but sometimes stories are stronger when you've told them more than once. You know which details to leave out, which details are important. So sorry about that. Guess that was an outtake.